All right, and we are recording.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
Why is the like hello part always the most awkward part of the entire adventure every fucking time?
Tried to do this before.
I didn't fail as badly as you, though. Not that it's a competition of who failed the hardest. We both failed pretty badly.
Well, no, you failed in that you allowed me to do it.
To continue recording.
In the first place.
Let's get in some stories that are more about, you know, like choice.
What?
Totally.
Casey, I'm legitimately afraid that you're going to listen to this podcast tomorrow and jump off the Golden Gate Bridge.
That was sappy.
Yeah, you do it. Can you do it? Seriously. It was entertaining. The point is we learned a thing.
We did.
We learned a thing. And we're here to atone and record this podcast for a second time.
Take precautions if you're going to record on show night. Show night. This is a show. This is a live show.
This is a live show at a bookstore at the Booksmith in San Francisco on Haight Street.
Haight Street.
You know
it. Live show. Once a month. It's called Shipwreck.
First Thursday of every month. We got one coming up on October 1st. I'm assuming this is going to be out before then. If not, cut this part out.
Oh, my God. I hope so.
October is traditionally Stephen King-tober, which is my favorite month of the year. We're doing a different Stephen King book every October until either we run out of books or the universe implodes on itself.
I mean, it's a lot of time.
Whichever happens first.
Like,
you know.
This show might be being done by our kids.
Yeah.
By the time,
and
by
we
the time
will
we
still
run
have
out
Stephen
books.
King books
yeah.
left. In the meantime, we have to talk about Frankenstein.
We do.
The
first,
the modern
we should
Prometheus.
Say that you're Amy.
I'm Amy. See, it's just like smiling in front of a camera. It's the worst. What's my name? I don't know what my name is.
Yeah, let's just get right into this. I'm Casey, and we're going to be your guides on this spiritual journey.
This is a horrible journey. This horrible spiritual abomination.
The first Thursday of November, we sat down with a couple hundred of our closest friends and did a live performance of erotic fan fiction based around Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah, so we invited six writers. We assigned each of them a character, and then we had all of our fiction read out loud by the fantastic Baruch Porras Hernandez, our thespian in residence, and you voted for your favorites. That's basically how it goes down. So Robert Brown, he's like on a suicide mission or something to the North Pole with some Russian sailors? And the best part about his whole mission is he's like trying to, quote, bestow inestimable benefit onto all of mankind, which is like totally something that white guys do all the time.
As Robert Walton wrote in his Twitter bio, he had always had, above all, an ardent curiosity about the world around him and was never one to shy away from new experiences. Winky face. I mean, he went to Burning Man last year and it changed his life. This year, he had told everyone he knew, namely his sister Margaret, that he was going to the North Pole. And now, his hired hashtag squad had abandoned him out of mofo, or fear of missing out. So here he was, stuck hanging out at home. Walton sighed loudly as he sank into the orange inflatable raft he'd christened HMS Joe Calderon. He languidly floated in the above-ground pool, or engineering feat, whatever you want to call it, that he'd installed as a training ground for his journey. Mags, we have this intellectual connection, you know? Walton, I messaged his sister and only friend. He looked up admiringly at his subject, the delicate flower that was Frankenstein's monster. The monster puttered around the pool in a floaty decorated to look like a jelly donut. I feel like he'd just belong on the playa. Dupe. The message turned green. Sent as text message. We live in a day and age with diet water, but sending data through the air remains unreliable, he muttered. My apologies, Captain. I'm utilizing substantial bandwidth. I have assigned my computing device to illegally download films. The monster's blushes sank into the deep V of his favorite glitter unicorn t-shirt, which he now regretted wearing into the pool. He promised no more evil, true, but his attempts to get Walton's HBO Go login had been futile. He'd even threatened to kill everyone the captain cared about, but that turned out to be a very short list. More recently, the monster had dedicated extensive research to monster-human relationships, familiarizing himself with the entire works of the Ladies Gaga, Stephenie Meyer, and Teen Witch in a bid to win the captain's love, acceptance, or at the very least, his disco stick. Please limit your download rate. I need to know about my likes or retweets. It's important to my research, Walton said. Don't worry, Captain. The monster could never quite get Walton's full attention. He was always writing everything down in that stupid smartphone. But, in an out-of-character fit of inspiration, he channeled Polly's critically canned top that performance, breaking out in his most seductive rap. I'ma get you up on that raft. Let me in your butt shaft. Captain, I'm out full mast. I want that sweet brown gash. The monster said. Making rap hands that sent little sensual ripples across the pool. He continued thrusting and shaking his barrel chest. Literally, it was made out of a barrel. And he continued shaking it at Walton. My stiff gale will bring out your sperm whale. Anything can happen when you're this mishappen. Walton's once curved sea cucumber stirred under the British flag of his Euro-style Speedo. His eyes glittered as he added to a to-do list titled, For the Benefit of Mankind. He tapped land seamen on Frankenstein's virgin monster under fine passage to North Pole. Bring her into port, then mate, he tweeted proudly to his 6 followers. Walton paddled the HMS Joe Calderon over to the monster, reaching under the donut floaty to tickle the monster's beans and pull at his soggy bean bag. Again, it was literally a bean bag. One of those, you know, love sacks. Ugh, so much paper. Ugh. He rolled the pellets in between his thumb and index finger, then gave each a light squeeze and a flick. His hands groped up the monster's Speedo until they landed onto a hard Frankfurter. The arguably oversensitive monster was unable to bear his unprecedented, dare I say, radical level of inclusion, affirmation, and acceptance. He tore his Speedo off, and his mini monster sprang loose. A self-lubricating strap-on dildo lined with LEDs that flashed in time to his heartbeat. Boink. 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 Scientific progress, my dear captain, he started. It goes boink, Walton said knowingly. More intellectually turned on than ever. The monster flushed. This wasn't exactly the magical and passionate beginning he'd imagined. Where was the rose petal-filled bath? The cleverly placed candles? How was one supposed to lose one's virginity without a little genuine? Meanwhile, the ever-oblivious Walton had pulled on his chemistry goggles and swim cap. He slid into the water, submerging himself to inspect the strap-on, feeling its layer of silicone grease and marveling at its clever 3-strap harness. Genius, he gurgled to himself. The monster's quickening rainbow of LEDs now flickered erratically in anticipation. Walton surfaced and live blogged. I've never seen one like that before. That boy is a monster. Walton was certain this Lady Gaga callback would be his last clever tweet of the day, as blood drained his brain and flooded his penis. He breathlessly climbed back aboard the HMS Joe Calderon and positioned himself on all fours, then reached back and pulled his butt cheeks apart. The empathetic monster gathered from these context clues that Walton was ready to do butt stuff. He gracefully slid into Walton's raft, and the captain began guiding the monster's movements, correcting and augmenting as the monster gently sank his anchor deep into the captain's warm, muddy seabed. Easy on the throttle now. Now, sneak back, further astern. Walton shut his eyes. He shut his eyes and he moaned, ease that line on out. Walton quickly alternated between cat and cow vinyasa flow poses, pushing the rim of his butthole up against the base of the monster's monster. You are moving with alacrity, the monster noted. I am causing pain or injury, he asked, ever thoughtful and communicative. Oh God, don't stop. Your syllable count per word. Give me that big flesh Kincaid score. I got an 800 on the verbal section of my SAT, the monster said to the captain's ear. Walton's moaning grew more urgent. I can prove that P does not equal NP, the monster said, his confidence growing with Walton's positive feedback. He slipped his massive hands around Walton's average-sized penis and began stroking and bucking to the rhythm of his mind's own gentle sexual fantasy. This recurring fantasy involved a lot of heavy petting, while adorable cupids played Sarah McLachlan on harps and unicorn kitchens looked on benevolently. Oh God, you can go forth broad and deep, Walton's figurative intellectual boner and physical penis swelled. The universe which started the Big Bang will reverse back into the Big Crunch. I'd bang your crunch, Walton almost came at his own joke. Dumbledore dies. Snape kills him. The monster yelled hoarsely. He wailed on the captain's sinkhole, pushing him to the precipice. I'm on the edge of glory. Walton squawked. Seconds later, his sturgeon row surged from his peepee hole like an unstoppable tsunami. The force tipped the two lovers into the pool and slapped cloudy water onto the deck. The end.
That was Robert Walton, as written by Giselle Chung.
Elizabeth is up next. She's Frankenstein's younger adopted sister. And when she's presented to him, he says he literally thinks of her as a possession. So then obviously he goes on to marry her.
This next story is titled Juicing the Saddle. Elizabeth Lavenza sat at an open cottage window awaiting the return of her husband, the pompous taintworm Victor Frankenstein. A purple black night had made it impossible to differentiate the road from the trees that bordered it, so she closed her eyes. She closed them. Besides, Elizabeth had learned that listening was the surest way to tell if her husband approached on horseback. Among his many quirks was that Victor Frankenstein rode with his saddle backwards, the hard shaft of the horn in the rear, instead of in the front, which was the typical position. As he rode, constantly prodded by the horn behind him, Victor Frankenstein grunted quite audibly above the clip-clop of the horse's hooves. Elizabeth once asked why he chose to ride continuously poked and abused by the wood-hard horn. Didn't it distress him, she asked. Frankenstein responded tersely. I simply prefer it that way. It braces me. And nothing more was said about it, which was representative of the relationship. As a self-absorbed perineum parasite, Victor Frankenstein peered boldly into the soul of creation and slid all the way up the DMs of nature, battering its inbox with requests. He permitted nothing to be asked of himself. It was his haughtiness that led him to produce the monster that he could not control. Elizabeth sat waiting and waiting and listening to the nothingness. It was their wedding night, and her husband had promised to return after securing a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of Tropicana orange juice from the local merchant. This, of course, was a ruse. In fact, he had set out on horseback for the pleasure it gave him, which was fundamental, and because he meant to find and destroy the monster before the monster destroyed him. Elizabeth embraced her solitary woes. How lonely to be totally possessed by another, and yet how necessary. Just then she heard footsteps in the hallway and thought that perhaps she'd fallen asleep despite herself, missing her husband's approach. As she turned to face her bedroom door, a giant figure emerged, filling her with a fear so immediate and absolute that it passed as easily as it had entered. She felt suddenly like an observer in her own body, free to act and yet unafraid of consequence. "What do you want?" she said to the monster. "I have come to extinguish love, to take what was taken from me. Since I cannot feel love, I will destroy it." Elizabeth laughed bitterly. "Love is the eternal fire which can never be extinguished. Come, you hideous creature, and let me turn your hell black coals." The monster obeyed and approached with heavy steps to the table where Elizabeth sat. "Do you not fear me?" the monster placed its icy hands on Elizabeth's shoulders. In a fluid motion, Elizabeth slid out of her chair and spun behind the monster, lifted herself to the tips of her toes, and leaned into the monster's ghastly ear. "One cannot fear what one claims. You are mine now."
"Thank you, yes,"
said the monster, now weeping openly.
"I have been so lonely. I am yours and truly."
Elizabeth extinguished one of the lamps on her table, dipped her fingers in the oil pit, and dropped the monster's pants. She then copiously slathered his infernal asshole with oil, which the monster found hella pleasurable. His rigorous erection served as a confirmation to her powerful technique. The two slid into an unhallowed trance, unified in the depths of their respective loneliness. Elizabeth, absorbed in her work, didn't hear the grunting approaching of her husband. When Victor Frankenstein entered his home with his saddle in one hand and an orange juice in the other, to find Elizabeth 5 fingers deep inside the monster, fisting him with all the gusto of a banana cream daisy bursting forth. After a long winter into spring, he stood for a moment, speechless. Victor dropped his bottle of Tropicana orange juice, disturbing the two from their dark reverie. Victor met the monster's perpetually watery eyes, which were now extra watery. "You fiend," said Victor. "What are you doing to my dear Elizabeth?" "Shut the fuck up, Victor," said Elizabeth. "Shut the fuck up," she said, without breaking the motion of her arm, pumping the monster's purple flower like a piston on a gas locomotive. "Shut the fuck up, Victor, and come here," she said. Victor obeyed, dropping the saddle as he approached. "No," said Elizabeth. "Bring it to me." Victor picked up the saddle again, shaking and mesmerized by the unprecedented power he was witnessing in his wife. The scrotum muncher Victor Frankenstein had forced Elizabeth to wait for his attention and his affection at every turn as he projected his own monstrous image onto the screen of the universe. Now, there was no more waiting. Through the magic of ecstasy, Elizabeth thought that the monster's dick was detachable. So she gently reached around and removed it. She gave him a rest from... No, okay. Yeah. All right. She gave him a rest from the fisting, and the monster exhaled like the bag of flesh he was. As Victor came closer to the pair, Elizabeth held the monster's dick above her head and motioned with it to Victor. Do you want this demonic dick, Victor? Do you want it? I don't deserve it. Do you want this monstrous devil's eggplant, Victor? I'm a wretch. Do you want this cursed, hot, infernal poker, Victor? Yes! 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 Rejoin me with my own repulsive creation. With that, Elizabeth took the saddle and slung it on the monster's back, who continued to weep joyously. Wasting no time, she picked up the open oil lamp and poured it down Victor's ass crack. And Victor shivered in response, murmuring, I am a wretch. Elizabeth guided his chest to the table next to the monster and mounted the saddle on the monster's back. She leaned over and began fucking Victor vigorously with the monster's dick. Ah, oh, said Victor, sweet nature. The harder Elizabeth fucked Victor with the monster's detached dick, the more the monster fucked. And Elizabeth found deep pleasure against the horn in the saddle. Now she understood why Victor liked to ride, and she resolved to do more of it herself. Yes, yes, said the monster, feeling Elizabeth's masterful operation of his dick inside Victor. I, the forsaken one, am finally loved. With that, the monster came explosively. And Elizabeth withdrew his dick from Victor, letting it spurt all over the curtains and the floor and the forgotten bottle of Tropicana orange juice. Finally, it jizzed all over the windows and out the window. Reaching the pinnacle of her own pleasure, Elizabeth, too, came out of the window, followed by the Victor Frankenstein, the ultimate fuckboy and deadbeat dad. As soon as their cum trifecta hit the ground, a dark forest teeming with vines and all matter of green life sprung off around the cottage. Wrecked, Victor Frankenstein spoke in a soft voice. If only I had known to look to the divine feminine as the source of life, I might have saved myself much tribulation. Shut the fuck up, Victor. Said Elizabeth, still riding the wave of her orgasm, sobbing with his disembodied dick, still dripping cum. The monster said, I am loved. I am loved! At last, I am loved. The end.
But I'm pretty sure it's Livenza. But I mean, regardless, she's...
And that was...
Future Elizabeth Frankenstein. Future Elizabeth Frankenstein's monster.
Elizabeth Frankenstein, Nee Livenza. As written by Evan Burton. Curious fact, a lot of people don't know this. Victor Frankenstein is actually the monster's inventor. That's what he's not. He's not the monster. He's the monster's inventor.
This is a fun fact, but the monster is not named Frankenstein. Do you guys know this? Do you guys know this? Because if you don't know it, you can go to the Wikipedia page for the book and learn it 6 times in a row.
I'm going to start adding that to every book. Moby Dick is not the captain.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the monster. That's up next.
Is that who is actually?
So fun fact. Fun fact, up next we have the monster. I don't know if you guys know this. Frankenstein is actually the doctor's name.
This story is called Love is Death Blind.
Oh my god.
I can't... Everybody take a deep breath. Let it out. Think sexy thoughts. Here we go. I can't believe you're leaving me for this dingbag, Helen Keller signed. Angrily into the palm of Ann Sullivan. It was a lovely Alabama spring day, and the pair of them, along with Ann's fiancé, John Albert Macy, were strolling around the local carnival. I mean, does the phrase bros before hoes mean nothing to you, Ann? Like, what the actual fuck? What is Helen saying, dearest? John asked as he guided them past the many sights and sounds of the fair, all of which were lost splendidly on Helen. Anne rolled her eyes and cleared her throat. Oh, nothing, pumpkin. She just said she's frightfully excited about our wedding. Yeah, listen, bitch. John is not a ding... Yeah, listen, bitch. John is not a dingbag, and he's not a hoe. He's an English teacher, for Christ's sakes, she signed furiously into Helen's hand. All the while smiling as John nodded towards the cotton candy vendor. And P.S., I know you can't see it, but he is really freaking hot. Like, super hot. He has an ass like a layer cake. All right, bitch. And last week I definitely got some over the pants action while you were in the room. So there. Helen shook her head. Yeah, asshole, I'm blind and deaf, but not stupid. I can feel your BJ vibrations from across the room. Also, I have touched the dude's face, okay? He's a 6 at least, bitch. Alright? I don't know why you're abandoning me for a 6. What the fuck? Are you and Helen alright, sweetness? John asked. Anne smiled and nudged Helen with her shoulder. Of course we are, my darling. Helen was just saying that she couldn't be happier that I'm settling down with a man like you, and that she's really jealous. Helen smiled sweetly at John and gave a little wave. I will fucking murder you, she signed into Anne's hand. I love you too! As they walked closer to the freak show promenade, Helen reflected on her life so far. She and Anne had been best friends ever since she met her back in the I am a baby terror, so I'm knocking shit over phase. Anne was the only person that could really talk to her, a feeling that was extra frustrating when you're a highly educated young woman and people still ask you if you're that water girl. Plus, Helen thought, if Anne marries this dingus, what the hell am I supposed to do? I'll just go back to being a weirdo with no friends? That's gonna suck. Also, her mind added morosely, damn, I'll probably never get laid. Suddenly, Helen smelled something interesting. A cold smell. A musty, comforting smell that reminded her of soil after rain. And as she inhaled deeper and deeper, she sniffed something familiar. Keen loneliness. She nudged Anne. What's going on? Anne sighed. They just wheeled out this dude they found frozen in the ice caps years ago. He's still frozen. Helen sniffed again and signed. Is he cute? She knew if she put her hand to Anne's face, she'd feel an eye roll, but she felt her friend pause for a second before answering. Anne said. Hard to tell, she signed into Helen's hand. But very tall. Oh, fuck. What Helen couldn't see was that the scorching Alabama sun had been melting the ice block all afternoon. And suddenly, the monster broke free of his cold prison and started stretching his limbs. The crowd started screaming and running, and Anne furiously tried to explain the situation to Helen. But you say he's tall, asked Helen as they ran. Jesus, Helen, that's not the point. He's a hideous former mansicle. Yeah, okay, but is he tall? Fuck it, yes, Helen, he's tall. He smells good. We're taking him home. And so they did. Anne, being used to dealing with frustrating people, offered the monster her coat and coaxed him to join them on their way home in the most awkward carriage ride of recorded history. It didn't take much convincing for the Keller family to take in this boarder. They too had experience with pariahs, and the monster finally settled into a home where the screaming was kept to a minimum. It took some time for him to adjust to living somewhere that wasn't a literal hovel. He was an eloquent conversationalist, though with obvious daddy issues, and soon he was able to join the Kellers and Anne at the dinner table. He was fascinated with Helen, but kept his distance, learning her movements as he had learned those of Felix, Agatha, and Safi years ago. On the rare moments when she was left alone, he watched her, seeing something familiar in her, a sad contemplation, something he recognized in the hopeful way her head bobbed whenever she thought someone was coming. He was charmed to see the candor with which she and Anne conversed, a candor only the keen observer could catch. He first noticed this when Anne told John Macy aloud that she had been simply contemplating what a joy it would be to be your wife, dear heart, when in reality he had seen her sign, "He's got a dick so pretty, I want to make an oil painting of it." As Helen laughed with wanton and abandon. Yet, he could not bring himself to approach lovely Helen. How could he cope if yet again he had found the perfect mate, only to be so grossly rejected? But he could not contain his passion long. One fateful night, when the family had gone to the theater and left Helen to rest, he crept into her room and sat down on her bed beside her. He took her hand. "May I lay with you?" he asked meekly into her palm. A smile quirked Helen's lips. "About fucking time," she said. Well, she sighed and laughed slightly. They lay down face to face. "You learned to sign," she signed into his rough palm. "Obviously," the monster signed playfully. Helen laughed a husky laugh before putting her hands over her mouth. She cleared her throat and spoke shakily. "I am ashamed of my voice. I think it makes me sound stupid." "You are not stupid," the monster said, holding her hand to his lips. Helen blushed and said more confidently, "Such a way with words." She ran her hands over the monster's face, feeling the lines of grafted skin. She traced her hands down his neck and under his shirt to the rest and over his heart, which was racing. "Do you think I am a monster?" he asked into her free hand. She looked up at him, and with her high voice, she replied, "Do you think I am?" The monster kissed her then, the way he'd seen other couples kiss. He kissed her softly like Agatha had kissed her father's cheek, then tenderly and open mouthed the way Felix had kissed Safi on the reunion. Then he drew her to him by her waist and kissed her hard like Victor had kissed Elizabeth on their fateful wedding night. Helen groaned and pulled her nightgown over her head. The monster had never seen the female body before, and he wept at the sight of it. Helen chuckled. "Come on, crybaby," she signed. "It's time to fuck." And so they made love, woman, and put together man, until the power of their thrusting broke the antique bed frame, and they came crashing to the floor. Sweaty and sated, Helen rolled to lay her head on the monster's chest. "If we're going to do this, you should know that sometimes I swear, and I am definitely planning to be a socialist." The monster heaved a sigh and placed her hand to his lips before saying, "If we're planning to do this, you should know I accidentally killed a kid once." Helen cocked her head and looked at him with sightless eyes. "Accidentally?" "Yes, it's a long story." Helen shrugged and kissed him deeply before snuggling back onto his chest. "We might as well start. We have all night." The end.
And that was Frankenstein, America's third favorite monster. As written by Molly Sanchez.
Oh, good lord.
Isn't it, what doesn't it go, it goes vampire, yeah. Werewolf, Frankenstein, mummy?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Frankenstein's the monster. I'm pretty sure. I'm almost definitely sure that Frankenstein is the name
feels
of the monster.
Feels right.
It feels right, it feels right. I read it somewhere on the internet.
Thank you, Molly Sanchez, for writing about Frankenstein the monster. to Monster Frankenstein.
Nobody thought this was funny at the show, but I think it's
I don't know if it is funny. It's hilarious to me, though.
I think it's so funny. Like, people get so pissed about it. All right, Safi is up next. Safi is an Arabian girl. There's this whole weird plot in the middle where the monster goes to live with some random family in the countryside, the DeLaceys. And then they just, like, have this girl, Safi, living with them.
But the monster's not living. It's not like he's a foreign exchange student that went and lived with
them. I mean, like, Safi is.
It was a dark and stormy night. Well, it was dark, anyway. Something the creature was thankful for as he settled in for another long night of peering through a stranger's window. He told himself it was for educational purposes. The fact that his hand very often ended up in his pants was merely a coincidence. Correlation is not causation, after all. That is a science reference. Because, guys, this is a science story. The creature had been peering through this particular window for many nights. It was a lot more interesting than reading Paradise Lost, which isn't terribly surprising if we're being honest. The goings-on inside the cottage, meanwhile, were a lesson in open-mindedness. Not in an intersectional awareness sort of way, but more in, wow, I had no idea all of those things could fit inside a butthole sort of way. And the creature was pretty into it. The window belonged to a cottage housing three peasant youths, who, despite being peasants, were all strikingly attractive and miraculously free of smallpox. There was Felix, the dashing young man with firm, tanned muscles, who seemed sad and therefore probably would have loved Paradise Lost. There was his sister Agatha, a blonde-haired and freckled young woman with a mischievous twinkle in her eye. And there was Safi, a bright-eyed and dark-haired beauty who enjoyed accommodating the siblings' many pleasures. Look, it was Germany, okay? It was Germany. There wasn't a lot else to do. And sex is cheaper than coal. And YOLO. Well, unless you're a reanimated corpse. But I digress. Safi, who was not from around here, was being coached on how to speak French by Felix, even though they were in Germany for some reason. This ended up being a euphemism for having a lot of kinky threesomes with his sister when dad's not home. It was a hands-on education in the various ways one could pleasure themselves with their hands, someone else's mouth, or a convenient gourd if the mood was right. The creature, who had never seen such things and had only read about them in whatever the 18th century version of Cosmo was, studied their behavior obsessively, learning words like shaft and cunt, and important phrases like use more lube, and if you move from that spot on my clit before I come, I'm going to punch you, bitch. Occasionally, the creature would see an older man in the cottage, father to Felix and Agatha and blind, but he seemed more inclined to wander around the woods than stay there, probably in part because it reeked of sex. And he really didn't need that kind of intimate knowledge of his children's sex lives, because, you know, weird. The first time he observed the three fucking, he experienced a strange engorgement of the flesh and a wetness in his trousers. Reading Milton had not really prepared the creature for the mysteries of his body. And he didn't really speak to his master about the birds and the bees. Watching Felix orgasm onto Agatha's face while Safi stroked his cock gave the creature some context for what jizz was. And he began to put his hands down his pants in order to catch the curious fluid from its source. He told himself it was to save his clothes from staining, but secretly, he just liked to lick it off his palm. Yeah, you know what I mean, boys. Yeah. On this particular evening, the creature peered through the window to see they were left to their own devices yet again. And part as their dad was blind, not deaf, today's devices appear to be a broom handle, a zucchini, and a vibrating contraption, which probably shouldn't have been invented yet, but we'll pretend that it was there to aid in the story, okay? Agatha had blindfolded Safi for some sort of game. She held the anachronistic vibrator in one hand and the broom handle in the other, and was teasing Safi to reach out and pat the arm that would be her pleasure object for the evening. Felix had pulled down his lederhosen and busied himself with the zucchini, putting on quite a show as he thrust the vegetable in and out of his eager asshole for the amusement of his sister. Safi, nipples hardening as she heard the moans coming from one side of the cottage, eagerly reached out and patted the arm with the broomstick, causing Agatha to giggle with devious delight. Because I cannot possibly write about the sexual use of a broom handle without shuddering, thinking about splinters, I think we'll adjourn back to the scene outside. The creature stared through the window, transfixed by the whimpers and gasps coming from within the cottage, his jaundiced hand stroking his dick, which was quickly resurrecting. He felt a hand on his arm. It was the father, the Lacey, home at last from the village. Ah, said the Lacey, have you been spying? The creature just sort of made an affirmative in response, partially because he had been really close to coming, and this was really inconvenient timing to Lacey. The Lacey, totally nonplussed by the nonverbal response, began to feel his way up the creature's broad chest, past his scars, up to his face. You're a strapping young lad, said the old man with furrowed brow. Why wouldn't you knock on the door and say hello? As you can see, they're pretty experimental. Although, I do wish they did chores with the same enthusiasm. The creature shook his head frantically.
Oh, I couldn't possibly. They are so beautiful and I am hideous.
De Lacey snorted in response. Huh. Well, looks aren't everything, my boy. Take it from me. An eagerness to please wins out over a handsome face any day of the week. He grinned a smile that sure was missing a few teeth, but made up for that in warmth. Because I could show you a bit of the old brotherly love if you think you'd give an old fellow like me the chance. And with that, he reached down to cup the creature's stiff prick in his hand.
It seems like you might.
The creature had never been touched like this before, and the warmth of the old man's hand against the cool but throbbing meat of his cock was a new, welcome sensation. Then De Lacey kissed him, hard but tenderly, his beard sloughing off the top layer of the creature's skin. It was okay, because De Lacey was blind, and the creature couldn't feel it. Soon De Lacey had spit in his hand and began stroking the hard flesh of his companion, beginning with a slow, gentle jerking off, then getting faster and firmer and faster and firmer. Yes, De Lacey murmured, just like we used to do in the German army. said the creature, feeling a bit embarrassed, but also very aroused. I'm not entirely sure that's the best idea, when De Lacey found one particular tug, left him with the creature's cock right in his hand. Feeling like a bratwurst that had been left on the counter overnight.
Oh! Oh! Said De Lacey. Well, that's awkward!
Woo! He lit a cigarette and offered it to the creature. The creature shrieked, and flung the cigarette at the cottage in horror, which immediately caught on fire. The end.
That was Safi, as written by Kitty Stryker, returning competitor Kitty Stryker.
Returning competitor and porn star Kitty Stryker, which makes me so happy. All right, so Victor Frankenstein is up next.
This is the monster, right?
Yeah. Victor Frankenstein the monster.
He's the real monster.
No, actually, who's the real monster? Who's the real monster is Percy fucking Shelley, because apparently Victor Frankenstein is modeled after Percy, who, like, ran screaming after they had a stillborn kid. So then if you read the book, the monster comes up to Victor when it comes to life, like he's a child, and Victor is repulsed by it and flees the room.
This next story is called A Shock to Your System. Victor dragged his bony fingers along the chain that dangled against the wall and out through his laboratory window. He yearned for that jolt, the surge that made his hair stand on end. Lightning had yet to strike any of the conductors. Victor had arranged outside, and as the rain slowly dribbled down the chain, he groaned in frustration. His conservative ways of getting off, using beakers as flashlights, shoving test tubes up the ass, etc., did nothing to stimulate him now. He needed Creature to come back and blow his fuse. Victor didn't even realize in his youth that he craved pain. Before going off to school, the closest he came to an erection was witnessing the lightning storm that destroyed the oak tree. Studying the ribbons of bark and wood strewn throughout the meadow the next day, he couldn't help but think about how delightful it would be to experience a similar shock in his rectum. Each of Victor's attempts to create and harness electricity for sexual pleasure were admirable, albeit weak after all. There is only so much one can do with wool, long johns, and static, especially after your father catches you furiously dragging your pasty flat bottom against the walls. Now, after years of classes and guidance from his professors, he had found a way to harness electricity for stimulation. His instruments of life became instruments of pain and pleasure. Victor was finally able to discover and experiment with his own mini atom, soon becoming aroused by the mere thought of lightning. He studied himself blissfully, clamping wires to his collarbone and nipples, inhaling the pungent scent of singed hairs and salty secretions. He stroked his member at an uneven pace, following thunderclaps of passing storms, and gasped as he came for the first time. His juices layered the walls of his lab, bolting out of his twitching penis as mini charges pulsed from his machines. But then inquisitive minds visited the lab, asking too many questions about his work and handmade tools. Victor quickly hatched a plan. Yes, these are my instruments of life. I shall try to recreate life from what once was. Yeah, that's right, Victor explained. Recalling notes from an anatomy lecture he fell asleep in. He hadn't planned on participating in any legitimate 18th century steampunk science bullshit. But now people were invested in his work, so he was like, okay. His memories of the experiment flooded his mind as he absentmindedly walked past his machines. Putting together the creature was an experience. Victor's member lurched to life as he stitched limbs together, accidentally stabbing his fingers and drawing blood. The coppery taste left him wanting more. After Creature gained life and intelligence, Victor prayed his desires would be understood and attended to with time. There was a steep learning curve to the left, about 12 inches. But after many test runs with castor oil and controlled shocks, Creature and Victor brought each other ecstasy. Victor's mind suddenly jumped back to reality as he heard the castle door creak, followed by uneven footsteps. Creature was walking a little funny as he entered the lab. "Where have you been?" Victor screeched, racing to him. "It's been too long. I need my juice."
Patience, Daddy, Creature said, winking at Victor. I need time to recover. I just had some more work done.
Victor was surprised and a little insulted. He'd always stitched up Creature after one too many rough nights with the leather belts and metal rods. What work did you need done that I couldn't do? Am I not enough for you?
No, Daddy, no, it's nothing like that, Creature said as he took off his coat.
He pushed Victor down on his knees, stroking his cheek.
I got a present for you. I know how bored you've been lately.
Victor glanced up at Creature before undressing him. Upon pulling down his trousers, he found Creature had a new kind of hardware, an ampalang piercing on his throbbing member to match the bolts Victor had installed on the sides of his neck. Oh, oh my, Victor murmured, gently stroking the barbells jutting out of the crossbar. Victor started to slowly lick the piercing, running his bumpy tongue along either side of the shaft, stopping once as he tasted blood. This is fresh. You haven't healed yet, Victor exclaimed, jumping up. We should cauterize the wound to, you know, prevent any infections. Creature watched as he got the same wires used for their nipples, charging them up. Victor pinched the wires to each side of the piercing, flipped the switch, and shuddered in delight as Creature howled, Oh, Daddy, you always know how to make it better. The bleeding stopped, but as Victor went to undo the wires from the piercing, he heard a buzzing sound. The barbells and crossbar were now carrying a very strong electric charge. Creature kept moaning as he went to lick the piercing again, thrusting his electric eel deeper into Victor's throat. With each thrust came a loud bzzzt from his mouth. Bzzzt. The charge was now coming in contact with Victor's dental fillings. Victor paused and pulled away as the creature to the realization, this was it. This was it. His ultimate fantasy would come true. Come, creature. Victor grabbed his hand and skipped to the operating table, scooping up some brain jelly from a failed experiment. Stroking the jelly up and down the creature's mambo. Yeah. Victor nibbled his neck bolts, grinding up against his torso stitches. He turned and bent over the table, whispering, Go, Grease Lightning. Creature grabbed Victor by the waist and thrust deep inside. Grunting in time with the buzzing, Victor yelped as he clutched the sides of the table for support, his mini atoms squirming against the cold surface like a drowning worm. Lightning struck one of the conductors, sending a bolt of electricity down a chain and into the lab as Victor slammed his hand on the table, screaming, Harder! Harder! Charge me! Harder, damn it! And in a matter of moments, Creature smoothly took the wires to his neck bolts and flipped the switch. Oh. Do you like my thunder, Daddy? Do you like it when I fill you with my electric load? Creature could feel the pulses making their way down from his neck. He started fucking Victor harder, thinking nothing of the growing intensity in each charge. Oh God, I'm so close, so close. Victor screamed as Creature rode, Daddy! At the top of his lungs, as the two climaxed simultaneously, an electric bolt surged from the creature's member and piercing into Victor's ass and out through every orifice in Victor's body. Yeah. Victor, now dead, continued to twitch on the table as the electric buzz died down. Creature unclamped the wires from his bolts and carried Victor in his arms outside to the conductors, a single tear sizzling down his cheek. After carefully arranging the body, he walked away as the storm intensified. As Victor's twitching stopped, the creature turned to look at him one last time, sprawled out. Good night, Daddy, he said, as lightning struck and split Victor in two, electric bolts bursting out of his skin. The end.
So
silver medalist Lily Miller with Victor Frankenstein.
And if you enjoyed that, Lily will be joining us in the October podcast because our number one couldn't make it. So you get to hear her destroy Carrie, which is going to be amazing. All right, we got one more. Well, Henry Clerval is right. So he spends a lot of time caring for Victor while he has quote insane fevers. Which I don't know what that is. Do you know what that is?
It's the male version of hysteria.
Right. Okay. Got it. So as his best friend, obviously he's the one who has to care for him during that. And then the monster kills him and Victor gets arrested for it, which is, you know, just a really subtle way to drive home that the monster totally ruins Victor's life. He's the worst. That guy's the worst.
This is a very interesting title, so you all have to listen to it. Skull emoji, lightning emoji, eggplant emoji. Victor Frankenstein and Henry Clerval played Magic the Gathering in an empty pub with no setting details. Victor kept using zombie cards. Victor, you are a force with necromancing cards, Henry laughed. I did this a lot in college, Victor mumbled. Victor, I would love to hear more about your time in seclusion. You didn't send word to the family for years, then showed up with sagging skin, black lipstick, smelling of embalming fluid. Victor rolled his eyes. Victor, adjust your countenance. You've been a fountain of misery for our entire trip from Europe to a different part of Europe. I hoped we'd drink to go to brothels and, you know, pay to cuddle. But you're acting like somebody deleted your Tumblr. Fine. Victor tossed his head, shifting dyed black bangs from one eye to the other. I was working on my art. It's, found object sculpture. I'm playing with the idea of creating life. Henry's eyes narrowed. Like in an abstract way? Henry asked. Nope. A village person with no physical description, burst into the pub. The demons returned! He killed 9 people! The peasant man yelled. I hope no one was hurt, Victor said. Henry ran to the man. Sir! What is this demon you speak of? Science! Victor screamed, breaking a bottle over the peasant's head. It's okay, we can put lightning on it, Victor said, and then broke the man's neck with his hands. Whoopsie, said Victor. Victor, you devil, what have you done? Henry yelled. I need more parts for my second monster, art project, right? Victor, are you dismembering people again? No, no one we know. Victor shrugged and sat back at the table. All this time we hoped you were just jerking off and threatening people on the internet. Only on my breaks, dude, Victor said. As a kid, you always tortured small animals and showed no capacity for empathy. But, Victor, we thought giving you half a science degree, thousands of dollars, and 2 years of seclusion would help, Henry said. Yeah, that was a bad idea. I chased nature into her hiding places, dabbled through unhallowed graves, and tortured the living animal to build my lifeless clay. But, I mean, like, we all make mistakes, right? Victor played another zombie card. Stop that! You aren't even tapping mana! And I can't believe a maniac like you was granted a lab. Dude, do you know how easy it is to get a lab in this country? Like, only slightly harder than getting a semi-automatic rifle, and demented science is the natural urge for me, like dancing in the rain or like falling in love with my sister. It just happens. There was a pound on the door. Victor shrieked and ran over to bar it. That has to be the monster. All the other characters are dead by now.
Henry, he's horrifying, violent, angry, and worst of all, not conventionally attractive. Another pound, Victor pleaded.
Please don't let it get me. I'm just misunderstood. Like I'm just the misunderstood white kid, man. I didn't know what I was getting into. I did know, but I hope none of the, obvious consequences would happen to me, man. Please, I'm done with my wicked occupation. Now my happiness lies in one day marrying Elizabeth and blindsiding her with my horrifying past.
How can we kill it? Henry asked.
IDK, just shoot it. This isn't Beowulf, just shoot it, man.
Victor said, slipping out a back window. The door boomed once more. Henry kicked it open. The night was completely black to build suspense. Henry could see nothing, but heard a sound like beanbags being tossed and snakes slithering. As the monster slithered into the room, Henry realized Victor had been wrong. This wasn't the demon. It was his half-finished wife. Victor had run many experiments aside from his monster. They had organized and escaped their prisons. Hundreds of zombie body parts filled the doorway, and mostly the sexy ones. Vaginas of every shade and dilation were jumping across the ground like suction cups, being plucked, then relocated, plucked, then relocated. Strong arms wobbled through like uncertain toddlers, and the dicks slithered on the ground like dicks always fucking do. But the breasts. Oh, the bushel of breasts. They leaped through the world like a water balloon toss with invisible players. One of the vaginas appeared to be the leader and spoke boldly.
You down to experiment? She said, speaking exactly how you would envision a vagina to speak.
The breasts began organizing into a colony that spiraled higher and higher, using a few penises, but only for structural integrity. Not because they needed them. Stammered. That's disgusting. But he was so turned on.
Oh, no, I don't want this to happen to me.
He wanted this exact thing to happen to him. He knew in his heart and he thought, I've been wanting this to happen to me very badly for a very long time. The breast coven was taller now. Four legs slipped under it, then stood, bringing the tit teepee to eye level. It looked like the back of every 12-year-old boy's notebook. Now, fully formed, the Wankenstein moved forward slowly with considerable tit-bouncing material. All Henry could think was boobs, boobs, boobs. Boobs, 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 and some dicks. An army of hands walked through the door, carrying a woman's head. She was passed from the floor to the top of Chesticle Mountain and leered down at Henry. The hands began running up Henry's body, massaging him, relaxing him. This was all the foreplay Henry needed. His oven was preheated and about to burn the house down. I see you don't need rigor mortis to get hard. The head stared at Henry's bulging monster, and she licked her lips with a tongue that was clearly four tongues sewn together. One of the many hands undid his pants. I just want to be held, Henry said. The head nodded knowingly. Mamre Mountain parted in the middle like a bathrobe, and Henry stepped inside. He was surrounded by a patchwork of skin tones like a quilt, if a quilt could fuck you. One penis slipped into Henry's butt comfortably, and on the first try, because that's how anal works in fiction. The walls burritoed him. He felt safe, but like safe in a sexy way. Henry heard the glasses behind the bar trembling, then the floor. The shaking moved through his body too. Henry realized the boob quilt was revving up to motorboat him. The shaking increased, then the bosom bushel waved like it was being wrung out. It felt like being in a cement mixer filled with water balloons. More dicks and hands joined the mix, making it a penetration tornado. The head began yodeling wildly in time with the tit pummeling. Henry pulled his arms above his head and started leaping up into the corpse cavern. The shaking increased and the yodeling got louder. Until a final pleasure seizure began vibrating the tower to pieces. Before the head fell, she yelled, "It's alive! It's alive!" The pieces disassembled quickly and exited. Henry lay on the floor, sweaty and covered in bruises. "I love you. I love you," he called after it. "Dude, let's keep this casual." "All right," the head said before rolling out. Henry lit a cigarette and took a long drag. "Fucking science, man," Henry said, shaking his head. Thank you, guys.
Give it up, everybody!
Speaking of coming back, we'll be back with the podcast after Carrie, and we'll be recording on location in Brooklyn.
Yeah, we got a Brooklyn show coming on October 6th. So tell your East Coast friends and enemies. Come out for New York Comic Con Super Week. We'll be with Cecil Baldwin. He'll be reading all of the crazy pieces, as always. We love him, so I don't know where I was going with that. That's the end of that.
That's the end of the podcast.
Come to the show.
And scene.
You can also find us on Facebook, on Tumblr, on Twitter with the hashtag ShipwreckSF. Always important that you have the SF. We post updates, we post stories, we post photos, we post upcoming show information. We're all over the place, so don't follow us, no matter what you do, because it's disgusting.
Our theme's by Chris Von Sneeder, and special thanks to The Booksmith for being our home base.
Woo!
Yay! See you next time.
I love that half of the audience is like, "I'm gonna have a lot of sex when I get home."
Yeah.
And the other half is like, "What am I listening to?"
Yeah. Yeah.
What am I, why am I here?